Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey, and I'm having a conversation here with Emily, and she can't believe one of the news stories that we're going to talk about, that pretty soon you're going to need to have a license, not the dog, but the dog handler, the person that owns a dog in England. We're going to have you go through a training program and get a certificate license before you can own a dog. I'm not kidding. Have you read 1984? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We did it again. We're on the air, and this is 3 years plus. Who knows how big the plus is, but we want to thank Emily and Mike for joining us tonight also. And we're going to have an interesting time because we're going to spend the night on the topic of firearms. Can you believe that? Well, we're not overdoing it because the United States Supreme Court this past Tuesday heard one of the most significant cases perhaps that it will ever hear on the subject of firearms, and that was McDonald versus Chicago. And we're going to be, lifting a few things from the National Rifle Association site in terms of some audio and interviews. And also we'll hear briefly from Mr. McDonald, the gentleman who actually is involved in the court suit, because he has this very strange desire. He lives in a dangerous neighborhood. He would like to protect himself. In order to do that, he wants to own a pistol, and in the city of Chicago, one of the few places on the planet, they won't allow that. I think the only people that can have pistols protecting them are probably the mayor and his counterparts there in the city, his colleagues. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the purpose of our show is what it always is. We want to discuss news issues, events, developments in this interesting and difficult subject of criminal justice, sometimes humorous also. Our show is dedicated to those energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States, and sometimes they even serve overseas, our own agents. What we try to do is look inside criminal justice practice and take a close-up look at the professionals as they do their job. Tonight will be a little steering off that a little bit, but I haven't heard any police officers comment on this particular law, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And this case won't be decided, McDonald versus Chicago, won't be decided until about June or maybe the end of June. Court announces these things before they take off and their session is over. But what you're doing is listening on the Blog Talk Radio Network. This is a place where you can get your own radio show. Alan Levy's the CEO of BTR, Blog Talk Radio Network, and he's the genius behind the medium, as I'm fond of saying. And he said something here. He sent me an email, said last week they had 29,000 radio shows. Did you hear that? 29,000 radio shows on Blog Talk Radio Network. So what that means is that any person, any interest group, any organization can broadcast their own show live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. I don't mention it as much myself because I haven't bought into it, but they ask. You can, in fact, go with advertising, and you can make 50%, I think I'm correct on that, unless they've changed it, 50% of the money that your show would derive from advertising you get to keep. So there are probably some people making a little bit of money off of Blog Talk Radio now. I don't know how much, but we'll have to see. But when you look at that array of shows there and click on politics and recreation, sports, exercise, on and on and on, you're going to recognize all sorts of names of people, celebrities, entertainers, some scholars, people that you would recognize that have their own show on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, many other people are guests on those shows. So get your own show. It would be something to look at. It's easy to do. You can sign up and be broadcasting in about 10 minutes. I'm not kidding. There's almost nothing to it. Well, tonight, as I said, we're going to deal with the issue of McDonald versus Chicago, and a very interesting case, and this is one that's going to guide actions relative to firearms controls and freedoms throughout the United States. And again, as I said, this case will finally be decided in June. But we're going to talk to some people tonight, listen to some people tonight who are actually there. One of them was the NRA's lawyer, and we'll get to hear some commentary from him. Before, when I've used a few things off the NRA sites, we keep having other audios intervene, so I hope we don't have that trouble tonight. We'll try to do the best we can. What you can do as a listener during the new segment of the show, or any segment tonight, if you choose to, you could call in and talk to us at 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. What we can do is hold five calls at a time, and all five of us can talk together if anything like that should ever happen. It has in the past. All these shows are archived almost immediately, so you can play them back and save them. And we do know that some folks use them for classes, instructional items, that type of thing, in some colleges across the United States. Well, tonight we're going to start off here pretty quick here with Audrey's Blonde Joke. And if you're hearing the show for the first time, you probably don't realize that Audrey England is a blonde. She grew up in London, England. She's been a collector of blonde jokes for as long as she can remember, and she has trunks full of them, and she's brought one of her blonde jokes out for us tonight. And Audrey, all set with this one? This one's about UFOs. I like that. Here we go. Here's Audrey's blonde joke, ladies and gentlemen.
Professor Haley, tonight's blonde joke has to do with a blonde who meets some space aliens. I hope you and the audience like it. Here it is. A flying saucer landed at a gas station on a lonely country road. The two space aliens inside seemed completely unconcerned about detection. In fact, the letters UFO were emblazoned in big bold letters on one side of their craft. As the station owner stood and gawked in silence, paralyzed with shock, his young blonde attendant nonchalantly filled up the tank and waved to the two aliens as they took off. "Do you realize what just happened?" the station owner finally uttered. "Yeah," said the blonde attendant. "So, didn't you see the space aliens in that vehicle?" "Yeah," repeated the blonde attendant. "So, didn't you see the letters UFO on the side of that vehicle?" "Yeah," repeated the blonde attendant. "So, don't you know what UFO means?" The blonde attendant rolled his eyes. "Good grief, boss. I've been working here for 6 years. Of course I know what UFO means and let it feel lonely."
Right, unleaded fuel only. Good joke, Audrey. Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, we like to roll right over from Audrey's Bon Joke to a public service announcement, important as it is, from the Ohio Coalition, Gun Coalition. And they're going to be playing an audio message for us that is directed toward the thugs and gangsters on the street. And I think it's directed toward them turning in their firearms. So Ohio Coalition, go ahead with your story.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition, and certainly it is a deadly idea, and what the intention is that we would like to get the guns out of the hands of these street thugs, and perhaps they could go to a gun buyback or something where they can get $200 worth of gift certificates, if you can believe that, or they could just get out and turn them in at the police department. So we hope that works. Ladies and gentlemen, we always do a green tip, and we have a green tip tonight, again, drawn from Esmond Floyd's book, 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. And I must confess that this one tonight, I am guilty of violating. Here's a very good tip, and in the book, it's number 759 out of 1001 Little Ways to Save the Planet. And I've been doing this, and I must confess, I've been using a regular-sized toothpaste container. And here's the tip, number 759, go large for toothpaste. Buy your toothpaste in the largest tube size possible to maximize the ratio of toothpaste to packaging. But avoid the pump-action plastic bottles. They are heavy on packaging and difficult to recycle. So don't get a pump-action toothpaste. I don't know if I've ever seen one of those, but I can imagine what it's like. But to get the biggest tube of toothpaste you can get. And I'm trying to think, if it's just because my toothpaste tube is twice as big as the normal size tube I get, and I throw it away, isn't that still the same size item being disposed, except it's all connected together? I don't know. Who's keeping the big calculator in the sky to figure out whether or not these green tips, in fact, make sense. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a look at some criminal justice news here in general. And I'm going to save our most of our firearms news until later tonight when we get to the content segment of the show. Our subject for tonight is firearms, and particularly McDonald versus Chicago, the case that the Supreme Court heard this past Tuesday. I had the whole transcript downloaded. I think you would probably prefer that I don't read it to you. It's only 72 pages, but they're double-spaced and it's big, but I won't do that tonight. So let's take a look at some of these other news stories. There's certainly some interesting ones going on. And this first story, I think, is one that you might enjoy. It's interesting if we can get it up there on the screen. We have so many things going on the switchboard here tonight. That it's almost impossible to count. Well, there it did. but this is an interesting thing. I don't know if you've ever read much about Los Angeles or if you've been to Los Angeles recently, but Los Angeles used to be quite a crazy place to be. There's a book, The Book of the Apocalypse theme park was... shows how the writer Mike Davis, he wrote, what, City of Quartz, too, which was about L.A. His 1999 book on nonfiction horror was called Ecology of Fear. And he went back to L.A. and he found something very different here just recently. Since he was last there, you know, he had gone down to the intersection where Rodney King was, you know, he charged with, well, I count myself among the visitors who felt a palpable sense of relief flying out of L.A. in 1992 when riots over racially charged police brutality verdict left 53 people dead and National Guard troops in the streets. The sense of menace, of collapse, of utter unsustainability was strong. What a pit, he said, I thought, and a pity. And then he talks about the image stuck in his mind and the brutal scene at the intersection of Florence and Normandy, where truck driver Reginald Denny was randomly pulled from his rig
and beaten to a pulp by thugs. All this was captured on live television, as some people can probably remember. But as the trend continues, murder in L.A. is now down 50% from the relatively placid level of 2 years ago, and it's down 80% for a long time. And the new chief, Chief Beck, he says there are still 40,000 gang members here, but that's half the number that they had during its peak. So the gang squad and things like that have been working. And what have they been doing? I bet you can't guess. They've been locking up criminals and sending them to the penitentiary. What an idea. It took California quite a while to figure that out. But then after they started doing it with the three strikes business, guess what? They're going to let out 140,000 here in the next several months. But he also gives praise to Chief William Bratton. And Bratton is the guy that brought the high-tech mapping strategy, crime analysis techniques to the city of Los Angeles. They'd been involved in it before, but not to the degree, I think, where they depended on it. And Bratton had done the same thing with the New York City Transit Police, where he made the transit system literally the safest and cleanest in the United States by using crime analysis techniques. And then he did the same thing, of course, with New York City in cahoots with Mayor Giuliani, and New York's homicide rate went from about almost 2,200 around 92 down to the point where it went way down to something like under 500, 400, don't quote me on that, I think it's 400 this past year. So that's an incredible thing, and we're pleased to see that largely Los Angeles, California is a wonderful place. I'm thinking weather first, but very nice, cordial people. As a general rule, that there are places where you can step off the beaten path a couple blocks too far and find some surprises. A lot of big cities have that. What's interesting about this, you've still got, Detroit standing out there as a place where, they've not had much success in driving their crime rate down. And they were way up there, just like L.A., about the same period of time. But New Orleans and Detroit and Baltimore are still hard patches, as the author says in this article, where they're still dangerous places to be. I was in Baltimore over several years ago, and I can account for the fact that, it's not the most pleasant place that you can ever be. This is kind of interesting, related to our story tonight. Just in the last couple of days, Attorney General Richard Cordray for the state of Ohio announced that Ohio's county sheriffs have issued a record number of concealed handgun licenses last year. In 2009, the total number of handgun licenses issued to Ohioans was 56,691, well above the previous high of 45,497 set in 2004, and that's the year when the concealed handgun law first went in effect in Ohio. So that's rather remarkable, isn't it? You would think that people would have who were going to do this would have done it before last year. But I was talking to some folks today, and in fact, was in a barbershop, and they were talking about how he had known people that were going to classes right now. But 56,691 last year in 2009. So that's kind of incredible, isn't it, that would still be going on. So we do know that about 2 million people a year use a handgun to ward off a felon, and that's something that we should keep in mind, and that's a point that was brought out to the United States Supreme Court this past week. So here's a good one, speaking of California. California, who knows how many years back now, 20? Has it been that long, Audrey? 20 years back. They came up with this idea of three strikes and you're out. Most people just know what that is from hearing it, and I've talked about on radio and television. But essentially what they're saying is that three strikes and you're out on, like, your third crime. If you've been arrested for a couple felonies, on the third crime you get sent to prison for a long sentence. This is a Yolo County judge on Monday sentenced a man who walked out of a store with a package of cheese in his trousers to 7 years and 8 months in prison. He got 7 years and 8 months for cheese, but he was a product of the three strikes law. Prosecutors had originally sought a life sentence for Robert Ferguson. You got to protect that cheese under the state's three strikes law. They dropped that bid last month, saying a psychological report had convinced them that a life sentence wasn't warranted in this case. You know, very few people get life for stealing cheese, maybe in Wisconsin or something, but not in most places. At Monday's hearing, Deputy District Attorney General, it says, Quentin Parrish, urged Judge Thomas Warner to consider at least one of Ferguson's prior strikes, one for burglary and another one for assault with a deadly weapon, and sentence him to a lengthy term. Perry said Ferguson was a career criminal who wouldn't change. He had 13 prior convictions and had spent 22 of the past 27 years behind bars, oh boy, yet he would still not obey the law. So there's your idea of prison being a deterrent, right? Apparently not. He'd been there 22 of the past 27 years. And, you know, most people in prison, I think our listeners realize, majority of prison have been there before, and sometimes more than once or more than twice. In 1994, Ferguson had escaped a three-strike sentence, yet here we are again, Parrish says. There were no weapons or injuries associated with his crimes, they told the judge. She argued, his attorney argued, a psychologist report had concluded that Ferguson was bipolar and had trouble controlling impulses to steal during manic phases. There you go. That's a pretty good defense, isn't it? And so he apparently is drawn to cheese, and he did this at a 7-Eleven store. He would snatch a woman's wallet at a 7-Eleven store, and then for stuffing a bag of Tillernook shredded cheese worth $3.99 into his pants at Woodlands Nugget Market. And so they'll be sending him to prison. Now, if they're going to let out 140,000 felons, does it make a lot of sense to send a guy to prison who stole not even $4 worth of cheese? I don't know. But I'm not part of the California legislature or their Department of Corrections, but it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it? Anyway, that's a good one. Go back here and try one more news story that I thought you would be interested in. Emily and I were talking about that. This may be too much. We'll have to see. Here we go. Now the government, this comes out of the Daily Mail in the UK, now the government wants competence tests before you can be a dog owner. I'm not kidding. Rough justice owners of all breeds, including border collies like this, I have a picture of one, may have to pay for tests. Every dog owner will have to take a costly competence test to prove that they can handle their pets under a new government proposal designed to curb dangerous dogs. Owners of all breeds would also have to buy third-party insurance in case their pet attacks someone. Now, that may not be too bad an idea. And then pay for the insertion of a microchip in the animal, recording their name and addresses. Well, I guess in Great Britain, they've already microchipped the people, right? No, they haven't yet. That's right. That's 1984. It's not reality yet. The proposals are among a range of measures to overhaul dog laws in England and Wales being considered by senior ministers, who are expected to announce a public consultation within weeks. Isn't that something? The critics say responsible dog owners would be penalized by yet more red tape and higher bills. One expert estimated the cost at £60 or more, while irresponsible owners of dangerous dogs would just ignore the measures. Same old thing about licensing, right? Well, law-abiding citizens will abide by it, and the ones who aren't law-abiding will pay no attention to it. Sounds like the laws on guns and things like that, doesn't it? But anyway, it'll be interesting to see if that comes through. They have some real cute pictures here of a couple of bulldogs, really cute guys, taking a walk down the street here. But isn't that incredible that now we have places on the earth that are going to have competency tests before you can even own a dog? Well, here's another one I thought was funny. Our legislators are so, but particularly in California, there's so much in debt, and people talk about California being the next Greece, and Governor Schwarzenegger's, working himself to death trying to figure out what to do along with the legislature. But they just passed a resolution, the California Assembly, of having a cuss-free week. Yes, Californians, you better get it out of your system while you can. amid the ongoing and occasionally tense debate over how to clean up California's budget crisis. Lawmakers out there, they're trying to tidy something else up, almost unmanageable. They're trying to tidy up their foul language. This past Thursday morning, the Assembly approved a ceremonial resolution during the first week of March into Cuss-Free Week. With the Senate expected to follow suit next week, all Californians will be asked to bite back on four-letter words and a few choice compound phrases. Bleep, bleep, bleep. Don't sweat. Police officers won't be waiting with soap. That's not the point. But this was inspired by a young teen who started a no-cussing school club. Isn't that interesting? Sparked an international movement. It's more about minding the delicate sensibilities of those around you, like your grandmother. When we're at our grandma's house, as Anthony Portatino, we have to respect and have decorum. Aren't there more important things, the author says in this article, for California to be dealing with right now? You would think, but that won't be too bad. Well, guess what? CSI shows are going to have to change. They now find out that that eye scanning can provide foolproof identification system for inmates. Isn't that something? A Baltimore inmate who bluffed his way out of prison, you remember hearing about that one here the last couple of weeks, would not have been able to do that to trick guards if they had eye scanners like the ones being installed at dozens of jails nationwide. The federal government's paying for the scanners. Raise your hand. That means you're paying for the scanners as part of an effort to build a nearly foolproof identification system and put a stop to such a case. I think there might be other ways to stop this, but that's an entirely different subject. They said after this occurrence, we'll be studying whether we can make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again, says the spokesman for the Maryland Corrections Department. But the eye scanning program is intended to put an end to such deception. The Justice Department has given a $500,000 grant to the National Sheriff's Association, which is doling out the money in $10,000 grants to about 45 sheriff's departments across the country. That will create a national database that better identifies, registers, and tracks inmates, said Fred Wilson, who's leading the association's effort. Eye scanners have been used for years by a few jails and military, some European airports, and private companies. This technology has been around for 10 to 15 years. It just hasn't gotten into the mainstream yet. Most of these $10,000 grants, they said, would be for the equipment, but some of it would be for training. But apparently, the FBI has fingerprints and criminal history of about 65 million people in its database. Is that all? This figure doesn't seem right to me, but perhaps. Sheriffs complain that fingerprint search results can take hours or even days. The results with the iris scan are nearly instant. 15 seconds it takes. Isn't that incredible? So Sheriff Fitzgerald. Scanning inmates is quick, too. A person simply looks into a camera, uses infrared light to illuminate and map the iris. Each iris is unique, contains about 6 times more features than a fingerprint. I didn't know that, but I don't study fingerprints. Well, would you know, our friends, and they are friends, at the Electronic Privacy Information Center, that this may be going a little too far. This raises some privacy concerns. We'll have to see how that turns out. I've got one more story here before we shift to, yes, here it is. I thought this was interesting. Makes me always think of Ronald Reagan's quote, "The most dangerous words in the English language is I'm from the government and I'm here to help you." But anyway, we find out that a classified review of the United States Secret Service computer technology found that the agency's computers were fully operational only 60% of the time because of outdated systems and a reliance on a computer mainframe that dates back to the 1980s, says Senator Joe Lieberman, an independent from the state of Connecticut. We have here a premier law enforcement organization in our country, which is responsible for the security of the president and the vice president and other officials, and they have to have better IT than this, but apparently they don't. Then they get out and talk about, the FBI, they're on their third attempt to get a computer system. I think there's a line, yeah. Since the FBI has been setting up a new $451 million project called Sentinel, which will allow agents to use a web-based system to incorporate the FBI's old existing files. While the Justice Department Inspector General has expressed some concerns that the program runs slowly for users and some cost overruns, it's scheduled to be completed this year. This is the third time. The FBI jumped the total about $100 million one the first time, couldn't even salvage it when they were redoing it around the turn of the century here. And then they started another one that needed revised, and I think that's the one that they're working on now. But isn't that incredible? My Lord, you've got little colleges and universities and businesses and all kinds of things that can set up efficient databases and use them, but we can't get that done in the government. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let's turn to our topic for tonight, and we're going to look at this business of the McDonald versus Chicago case. And what I'm going to try to do here to start off, bear with me a second, I'm going to try to listen to Mr. McDonald to start off and listen to him. It's about 3 minutes. I think we can find that story here pretty quick. And if you hold on, we'll find it here, and I think we'll get a chance to hear him talk about his particular case. Hold on just 1 second. Mike, can you find that for me real quick? I think you can find it. Sorry about that one. Here we go. I'll try to listen to Mr. McDonald himself talk about his plight. I think this will work. Hold on. It's loading. Comes out of a Chicago TV station. We're going to use their clip. We're going to hear from the McDonald later in just a second. Well, it's not working as quick as we thought, is it? Welcome to 1990. We'll see here if we can get this going. I think we've already got some interference from the NRA site, but let me check that out too. I think it's time, Mike, to start using 2 computers. I do things like this. Probably be a good idea. It wouldn't be that hard to do. Stay with us. It's opening, as we say. What a mess. We had this all set up perfectly. They even tested it, but I think what's happened is that the NRA has started to broadcast live, and that's interfered with some of the things we had set up to go. I should have learned about that the last time, right? We did that. But I've got 3 nice interviews of people that you'd want to hear. For example, Wayne LaPierre, and the president of the NRA, and the attorney that was there for the case. Okay. Don't you love silence? We're stuck. I think we're going to come out of it. Hold on just a second. Take a snooze, Mike, while we're doing this. We'll work out. Mr. McDonald, by the way, Otis McDonald is 76 years old, and he lives in a neighborhood that virtually traumatizes him, and he hears strange noises, he sees thugs on the streets, and he's worried about protecting his own life. And for that reason, he would like the right to own a handgun for self-protection when somebody breaks into his home. And I think we're pretty close to having a chance to hear him talk for a few seconds or a couple of minutes about his flight. But he says he's really fearful of this. I've heard him talk several times on television. Let's see if we can hear him talk right here.
Saturday, official church service that celebrates the start of a new judicial session. New member Sonia Sotomayor was there on the docket for this new term, which starts tomorrow. What could be a historic ruling on gun rights? Here's David Curley.
The 60-year-old monitor was for out there a week and a half ago in the city of Chicago, WFLG.
Ownership is easier.
Anyway, that's a good start on that. What we're going to try to do is shut off Cam Edwards on the NRA. I don't even understand this. He starts playing when you don't even click on him. Hold on just a second. We'll see if we can fix that or not. We might even terminate the show here tonight since it's 9:41.
And some subcommittees report that out to the full committee today. So that is a positive.
Okay. Now, what's that?
Well, there's a couple other positive things.
Okay.
Two of them don't really have a real impact. They did conform the House version of the restaurant ban repeal to the Senate version, which is already on its way to the governor, and they reported that out. They also, House Bill 885, which is a House version of Senator Vogel's, the firearm in the locked container, that was also conformed to the Senate version and was reported out to the full committee. And then there were two other bills, House Bill 1092, which I believe is the bill that allowed retired law enforcement to carry a concealed firearm without having the requirement of needing a permit. And then House Bill 1191, which basically says the clerk of court can go ahead and issue a concealed carry permit if they meet certain requirements. Apparently, there are some localities where the circuit court judge wanted to do that instead of the clerk. This authorizes, makes it clear that the clerk can go ahead and issue that. So that's a good bill, too. The bad news is all the other bills, like One Gun a Month, and the other program bills that were in the committee were all recommended to be passed by indefinitely or PBI. And yesterday, we didn't get to this when we spoke last night, Castle Doctrine was defeated in the full committee yesterday.
Okay. All right. Now, I'll get back to Castle Doctrine, but when you say that these bills were reported to PBI,
yeah, they recommended the bill be passed by indefinitely, and I spoke to a lobbyist that works the General Assembly for us, and he said that trying to make the argument that they have to actually hear the bill in the full committee is probably not going to go anywhere, because when you dig into the rules, as long as the subcommittee reports out that they are recommending that the bill be passed by indefinitely, if that meets that requirement. So it is all likelihood those bills will not be heard by the full committee. It is possible they will handle it the same way as the House does, but just the committee chair, Toddie Fuller, could just as easily on Monday say, the subcommittee met, reported out these bills, recommended reporting these bills, and recommended that we PBI the other bills, and the full committee could just rubber stamp that.
Wow. That is, David, I tell you, that is disappointing to hear.
It is. Now, I tend to try to be a guy who looks at the glass as half full. We have gotten some very good measures advanced this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so we need to...
don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We meet again, don't know where, don't know when.